1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's biggest rock bands. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio of the remarkable comeback of Hall of Famers, The Kinks.
I'm a sleepwalker. I'm a night stalker. It's a little music. Only jukebox music. Only jukebox music.
In America, but coming from nowhere again, it was like having a second opportunity to do it. Because we didn't really do it first time. You know, the first time round we came to America and the band nearly broke up. So we didn't really go all the way.
He just spends his life living in a rock and roll fantasy. He just spends his life living on the edge of reality.
Take a good look around. The misfits are everywhere.
I remember when we first recorded Lola. It was banned in Australia and a few other countries because it dealt with someone who's a transvestite, a transsexual. But now it's commonplace. I mean, transsexuals are accepted as part of society. That's how the world evolves itself. And I think that this century has been, I think, a slightly better place, I think, because of rock music.
Welcome back in the studio. I'm Ray Davies of The Kinks with Redbeard.
Historically, always lumped into the mid-60s British invasion bands with the Beatles, Rolling Stones, and The Who, London's lovable The Kinks nevertheless took a considerably different path to their rightful place in rock history, particularly in America. Now stop and think about this. At the era-defining iconic moments in rock between 1967 and 1977, I'm talking the Monterey Pop Festival, Woodstock, Altamont, the Isle of Wight festivals, Watkins Glen, San Francisco Day on the Green, where were The Kinks? Songwriter and lead singer Ray Davies, his wild child guitar-playing younger brother Dave, and The Kinks had reeled off a string of top 10 hits in America and the UK, with You Really Got Me, All Day and All of the Night, Tired of Waiting for You, Sunny Afternoon, Victoria, Ape Man, and the classic Lola. Then, inexplicably, The Kinks, who had helped to define rock and roll in the latter half of the 1960s on U.S. radio, went MIA on the entire first half of the 70s decade. But it certainly was not for lack of trying. After the critically acclaimed 1971 album Muswell Hillbilly sent songwriter Ray Davies into a lengthy series of concept albums which failed to capture a mainstream audience. Much to his credit, Ray Davies seems much more comfortable discussing The Kinks' hits and misses than many of his peers.
Listen, I can't understand it because it's... Put yourself in their shoes, poor old boys. You know, they got stuff they want to write, I suppose. I could understand them not wanting to be sort of trapped by their past because it's like saying to Picasso, you know, you can't paint any more pictures after the blue period. And he was 40 years old when he was going through that. Or cubism, whatever. Unfortunately, it's not even the fans that say that. It's all the things you have to go through. I'm talking about media people, record companies, TV, radio. They're the people that sort of are judgmental on this. I think fans always have this theory. The great thing about playing live, it's a one occasion you can be one-on-one with your fans without going through all the business of relying on somebody to cut the record, someone to press the record, to do the artwork, then to play the record. You know, it's the key holders, whatever they are. And I can understand, going back to your question, I can understand that the guy's being a little bit reticent about talking about the past too much. But, you know, I've never really had a problem with that because even when I was 21, I was writing songs for my granddad to sing. They wrote songs, and the classic one is Pete, who wrote Wish I Could Die Before I Get Old. He's not that old now. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's a damning line to have written. If it's the work's good, be remembered for good work. And hopefully the new work you do will be better or as good, or maybe not as good. But at least if you can function and write and perform, I think it's quite a blessing to be able to do that. So But you got to understand, these guys have tremendous egos. You know, I've no idea what it's like to have an ego, but they must have continual worries. You know, but you know, coming, you know, when Robert Plant was 20, he had his first hit, and it was a sexually driven song. Led Zeppelin music was, you know, it was a head job. You know, it's a lot more difficult to carry that off. Whereas I've had character songs, you know, Celluloid Heroes. I could be 90 years old when I'm singing that, and I wouldn't have to worry whether I'd be embarrassed by singing it, because I think it's kind of ageless.
Everybody's a dreamer, and everybody's a star, and everybody's in movies. Doesn't matter who you are, there are stars in every city, in every house and on every street. And if you walk down Hollywood Boulevard, their names are written in concrete. Don't step on Greta Garbo as you walk down the boulevard. She looks so weak and fragile, that's why she tried to be so hard. But they turned her into a princess, and they sat her on a throne. But she turned her back on stardom, because she wanted to be alone. You can see all the stars as you walk down Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you've hardly even heard of. People who worked and suffered and struggled for fame. Some who succeeded and some who suffered in vain. Rudolph Valentino looks very much alive. Stepping on Bela Lugosi, cause he's liable to turn and bite. But stand close by Betty Davis, because hers was such a lonely life. If you covered him with garbage, George Saunders would still have style. And if you stamped on Mickey Rooney, he would still turn round and smile. But please don't tread on dearest Marilyn, cause she's not very tough. She should have been made of iron or steel, but she was only made of flesh and blood. You can see all the stars as you walk down Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you hardly even heard of. People who worked and suffered and struggled for fame. Some who succeeded and some who suffered in vain. Everybody's a dreamer, and everybody's a star. Everybody's in showbiz, it doesn't matter who you are. And those who are successful, be always on your guard. Success walks hand in hand with failure along Hollywood Boulevard. I wish my life was a non-stop Hollywood movie show. A fantasy world of celluloid villains and heroes. Because celluloid heroes never feel any pain. And celluloid heroes never really die. You can see all the stars as you walk along Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that your celluloid heroes never feel any pain. And celluloid heroes never really die.
The exquisite Celluloid Heroes appeared on the Kinks' 1971 album Everybody's in Showbiz, yet still had disappointing U.S. sales. Ray Davis then wrote a series of musical shows, 1973's Preservation Act 1, a double album no less, Preservation Act 2 followed a year later, and Soap Opera, bubbled up in 1975. Not a one broke into the U.S. top 50. Here's Ray Davis.
Tried to experiment. When we did Preservation and those musicals, rock musicals, they were not great hits. Not successful albums, but they were really hit shows. You know, it's like we had Broadway shows there, you know, in the mid-70s. And the record company we were with at the time, I think it was at RCA, were not totally in tune with what we were doing. And so it made it hard for us to actually, because they were the people that got the record out, you know, to the audiences. And something was going wrong there in the chain of communication. So we've had our ups and downs with record companies. But somehow it's that team spirit in the band has kept things going. And maybe it's because we're all thinking it's us against them. And they are, again, the record companies. It's not their fault, you know. It's just maybe at RCA particularly, there was a different president in there every month. And every time we went there was somebody else running it. And that's a continual problem that these companies have. That's what's so sad when you see people like Chris Blackwell at Island taking a back seat and Clive Davis at Arista. The reason I signed with Clive with Sleepwalker was because he was still one man at the helm who understood the music, and I could relate to music relate to Clive Davis through music, which is good. But now he's taking more of a back seat and the business is taking over. But all these small independent labels were really important, and I think they were the cream of the music industry.
Over his 50 years of mostly superlative songwriting, Ray Davis has developed a reputation as a chameleon-like performer with a myriad of memorable musical personas.
It's finding a character. I know it sounds strange, and I keep referring to this as if it's some other person, but writing a song and singing is like discovering another person. You find your way inside that person. I don't think there's any difference between being a singer and, say, being a dancer or ballet dancer or an actor. You find your way into the role, and as soon as you become absorbed by that character, it's easy to sing it or dance it or act it. And maybe that's what it is, finding my way inside the song.
When the opportunity to join veteran record man Clive Davis's Arista label appeared in 1976, it came with one caveat for the Kinks. The record company would not accept concept albums. So Ray Davis rallied the troops in the Kinks.
Firstly, I said to the band, look, I'm going to make it easy for you now. I'm just going to make a normal record. And, you know, 10 tracks, 12 tracks aside, or an album. And then I thought, oh, isn't this going to be easy? I just have to write songs. I don't have to think about their place in the plot or the play or whatever. But then I found myself writing a whole concept record. You know, I believe that people write a set of songs for an album, and it becomes a concept album. Born in the USA was a concept album, in my opinion. So even though the writer wasn't really trying to do it. But I thought when we made Sleepwalker that it would be a nice bunch of songs. But there is some sort of thread through it. Well, you know, a strange thing, I remember very clearly taking the band into an office somewhere and just playing assorted sounds and tracks to them, not necessarily Kinks songs. And I said, the atmosphere I want on this record is really dark, and it's someone who doesn't know where he's going. So I gave him a sort of brief of what I wanted to do before I wrote it. I knew in my mind what I wanted, but I didn't have the songs yet. And that happens a lot with me.
One of the songs that Ray Davis submitted for the new album, called Jukebox Music, seemed, at least on the surface, to poke good-natured fun at himself for the preceding 5 years at what some critics thought was simply too precious to be rock and roll.
Now I think about it, I wish I'd written it another way, but it is kind of direct and it does say what I was thinking about. I think it's someone who actually believes that the music will get them out of their situation and help them out of a bad patch, you know? And there is a tendency when you're unhappy about yourself and your life, you do tend to be drawn to something, whether it's a film or a book. You say, well, what's right about this book? What does the character in this book or this record do if they were in my position? And you do look for things like that to help you through your own situation.
Thank you.
It's only jukebox music from the Kinks' 1977 album, Sleepwalker. Coming up next, Ray Davis reveals his surprise at his own reaction to the passing of a legend. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Ray Davis in the studio of the Kinks' comeback album, Sleepwalker.
Welcome back in the studio. I'm Ray Davis of the Kinks with Redbeard.
Thanks, Ray. Back-to-back comeback albums, Sleepwalker and Misfits by the Kinks. Songwriter, lead singer Ray Davis was surprised at his own reaction when the king of rock and roll checked out of the Heartbreak Hotel.
Elvis Presley dying had more an effect on me than I realised. I loved his early Sun, you know, records on the Sun label and the guitar playing on all those records, but I was never really big Elvis fan. But when he died, I really it affected me a bit. I suddenly realised that the person that really introduced me to rock music wasn't there anymore, and had been turned into this Vegas creature. No idea, and it's wrong of me to assume I know what he felt, but I just wondered if he was happy with that. But that's what made me sad. But out of that, you know, the good thing about being sad is that you can get happy again, and you write yourself out of it, and you find other things to make yourself laugh and cheer people up. And hopefully that song starts off pretty down and doomy, and it comes up to some elevated thing at the end. I like to do that. You've got to start from somewhere. There was something in my character that was going through a dark person. It's like groping in the dark for something new to do and to be. I think that's what kicked that song off. Although the song may just sound like a rock and roll song, there are parts of it that really say a lot about the way I was feeling, and certainly the way the band was. Again, I keep going back to the band because I do kind of... I'm the spokesman for the band, really, in those songs. But I do feel that's a point in time, and it says it about what the band was going through then.
I start to creep through the shadows of the moonlight. I walk my beat. Better close your window tight. I might come in for a fight. Oh yeah. When you're fast asleep, I walk around on my tippy toes, and I get into places that nobody knows. I'm always around if you wanna meet. You can find me on almost every street. You always get me on the telephone. I'll even come to your home if you're ever alone.
title song to the Kinks' 1977 album Sleepwalker helped to put the Kinks back on powerful U.S. rock radio then, which in turn allowed the veteran band to finally headline major American arenas for the first time, believe it or not. The momentum continued into what would become the Kinks' 16th studio album.
When I got Misfits together, I remember very clearly it was 77, 78. We were rehearsing in a church hall, a really cold church hall near Conk Studios. And I just got the drummer playing this stuff. And I said, play this backbeat, Mick, and play this keyboard, John. And then I came out with the lyric of Misfits on the spot. I wrote it on the spot because it had been in the back of my head like for 3 or 4 months. I was researching it and it was in my head and I made a few notes. But I didn't really write it until I got there with the band. And it was a feeling, the whole record was somebody who made himself an outcast or didn't want to fit in with where he was at, or somebody who was thinking of getting out of a relationship or out of a living environment. And so that was maybe the thread on that record. So I do all this before I write the songs. And maybe I sense it's a time to do it or be like it. So when I look back at all these songs now, even though I've moved on and I've written them for other characters, they do mirror what my life was about, right, at that time. It's quite interesting. There's nothing clever in the song, really. What I like about it, it sets up images. The lyric sets up images. And I remember writing, thinking about that song. At the time, I was going to pubs a lot, not to drink that much, but just socially, because a friend of mine was in Monty Python. He used to live nearby, and a few writers, hacks we call them in England. I just used to meet with these guys and talk, and they were all kind of misfits in their own way. I think that's why people go to pubs in England. And there was one guy in particular who I used to watch, and he used to go out and he used to sleep in the hedge, you know, in a ditch. The next day he'd come in the bar and he looked great. I said, where have you been? He said, oh, I slept in the field last night. Well, he didn't actually say that, but that's what he had done. And maybe, you know, seeing these people and again, picking up from people I've been with, that's what set the idea in my head. And there's a lot of me in that. But there's a lot of me that it doesn't exploit what I am and doesn't go the whole way. I just become it in my head. I write the song, then I disappear and go somewhere else.
Sleeping in a field, but you look real rested. You set out to outrage, but you can't get arrested. You say your image is new, but it looks well tested. You're lost without a crown, yet you go your own way. You say your summer's gone, now the winter is crawling in. They say that even in your day, somehow you never could quite fit in. Though it's cold outside, I know the summer's gonna come again. Because you know what they say, every dog has his day. You're a misfit, afraid of yourself, so you run away and hide. The mad-eyed gazes,
Look at all the loonies and the sad-eyed failures. They've given up living cause they just don't care. So take a good look around, the misfits are everywhere. La la.
Song to Misfits came out in summer 1978. Still to come, Ray Davis admits to bouts of self-loathing, while the Kinks' commander assesses rock and roll's half century with poetic pride. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online anytime at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with rock poet laureate Ray Davis of the Kinks in the studio.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Ray Davis of the Kinks for Misfits.
I think any sensible person who's at all creative has got an element of self-loathing in them. Yes, there's, with me they call it tongue-in-cheek. The secret is always make yourself get the brunt of it and not take it out on some other poor person. You know, because I think that's the key to the best comedy as well. It's easy to take the piss out of people, you know, and to it's easy to ridicule people. But, you know, to turn it in on yourself at the end of the day is important. And certainly in my stage performance, I always do that in the sense that, I guess, what is humour? I mean, you're just making yourself up, you know, make yourself laugh at the world. And hopefully it'll make you feel like a better person. I think maybe that's what humour is. But to do it at somebody else's expense is not great. It's just a cheap shot.
Hello you, hello me, hello people we used to be. Isn't it strange? We never changed. We've been through it all, yet we're still the same. And I know it's a miracle we still go. For all we know, we might still have a way to go. Hello me, hello you. You say you're worn out, wanna start anew. Throw in your hand, break up the band. Start a new life, be a new man. But for all we know, we might still have a way to go. Before you go, there's something you ought to know. There's a guy in my block, he lives for rock. He plays records day and night. When he feels down, he say we've got nothing left to prove. The king is dead, rock is done. You might be through, but I've just begun. I don't know, I feel free and I won't let go. Before you go, there's something you ought to know. Dead is a family, he lives for our music. It's the only thing that gets him by. He's watched us grow, and he's seen all our shows. He's seen us low, and he's seen us high. Oh, but you and me keep thinking that the world's just passing us by. Don't wanna spend my life living in a rock and roll.
Song Rock and Roll Fantasy on 1978's Misfits album by the Kinks rivals the poignant Celluloid Heroes and Waterloo Sunset, all from the keen eye and huge heart of Raymond Douglas Davis.
You know what's good? You're saying this, and all these songs obviously mean a lot to people and obviously to me, and the apparent lack of big mega success that they had. But that's what's so good about the Kinks, is that they're judged, I think the music's judged and the records are judged by the people that like them, regardless of their charting position, which is nice and something I've just realised recently, and it's good. And something like Come Dancing, which was at the end of that whole camp, if you call it a campaign, you know, Come Dancing, at the end of the Arista years, we achieved everything that the band decided to do just before we signed with Arista. And we got our chart success at the end, but doing it along the way was the best part, and coming up with all these songs who weren't big successes and got to number 40. I think that's what's good about the Kinks. Many other bands, they say, oh, our last album only sold 12 million, and the one before that sold 20, and I won't mention the names of the bands, we all know who they are. But the fact that you can get records played and get on the radio and get records in the charts is great, but there's so many bands that fall away because they don't have the continued huge success that they had at the beginning. I think it says a lot for the Kinks as a durable force in many ways, because they could have easily given up and stopped, but they stuck with it and stuck with me too. And I kept writing as a result. So it's going back to that team spirit, you know, that we've got. And you can't buy that sort of thing. It's just something, some magic people have. And I'll say the same with The Who and The Stones. I think there's a team spirit there.
I think when we go on stage, it's the only time that we feel that it's not really that serious. When you go off tour, you think, oh, the real world's closing in on you, you know, and people go home and realize that life is pretty dull, and the only thing to do is to go back on tour again. And I think we're happy. The Kinks have been a family unit, in the sense that not just Dave and I are related. I think the band, like I said, I think if we didn't do it for the money, we'd do it anyway. Like the thing about the audience, it's something removed, and people forget that they've paid to buy a ticket. I mean, it's not to do with it's just wanting to be there, and it's a lot to do with our playing, you know. It's when they made this record, nobody came up to me and said to me, what's the deal? You know, they don't do that. Well, I know other bands that are around now, newer bands as well, they have all the deal worked out before they actually make music. And I suppose that's a smart thing to do, I'm not sure. You know, they got all the deal points done, and But we don't think like that. And it's not a very business-like way to go about things, but if you can't do it, if you can't pull it together, what's the point of having the best deal in the world? It won't make the music any better. Obviously, people have got other considerations. They've got families and lives. But I always say to the band when they say that, I say, well, get rid of the family. You know, it's not important. No, I know they got lives. I know they got. We've all got lives. But think of it. I say to the band, think of it as a hobby. You know, if you've got to get a day job, get a day job, and we'll do this at night. And not until I'd written X-Ray, my book. It wasn't until I finished that I realised the people that influenced me. My real career was based on an area like less than a mile square, Muswell Hill, Highgate, where I grew up, two villages in London, and all the characters I saw there. So I learned a lot there, and I learned that people are interesting because of their faults. The perfect characters didn't interest me at all. It was the people who had a bit of edge to them, kind of hid away in cafes behind the shadows so nobody noticed them. They were the people that I was drawn to. And I suppose that carried on in my writing and songwriting and lyric writing. I think that when the Kinks first came to America, there was a big gulf in understanding. Even sense of humour was different. It still is to a degree, but it was drastically different then. But those barriers have been broken down through rock music, through pop songs, through people coming over with ideas. I remember when we first recorded Lola, it was banned in Australia and a few other countries because it dealt with someone who's a transvestite, a transsexual. But now it's commonplace. I mean, transsexuals are accepted as part of society. That's how the world evolves. And I think that this century has been, I think, a slightly better place, I think, because of rock music. I think it's really broadened people and made people sort of more or less judgmental on others and actually try to understand other cultures rather than turning it into a violent, drug-crazed world. The drug culture was emerging in the 50s and the 40s. It was there in the 30s, but they called it something else. The only thing that's happened is I think ordinary people have become, you know, part of that culture. Whereas, you know, that you've got all the stories in Hollywood in the 30s where people were like doing lots of cocaine and doing drugs to stay sharp and stay on the set and look great. I wouldn't blame the culture on rock and roll. I think rock has improved the culture. Even some of the stuff that's possibly banned on radio. You know, I think we've got a really discerning, for the most part, audience out there. I mean, people can make their own minds up about records. I'm not saying that people should have the right to put out sheer abuse on the radio and just for the sake of it, just to grab attention. You know, the audience will know. They'll turn off eventually.
Have you heard about the trouble throughout the land? Executives are killing themselves, and the IRA are killing everybody else. Don't panic, don't lose control. Keep your head, keep a hold. Act normal, there's nothing wrong. Stay cool, just carry on. You gotta live life, be yourself. You can't live life for anyone else. You gotta live life, that's all you. And the unemployment queues. It's only life.
said dedicated followers of any old thing. They got every solution for every revolution. They live in the slums just like the poor people do, but they'd rather sniff coke instead of food. Right wing fascists beat up the flags, then they salute the Union Jack. We can't pretend there's nothing wrong. Carry on.
The Kinks, you gotta live life from Misfits. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest, Ray Davis. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.